This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
There's just no end in sight.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. What is possibly going to stop the price of oil from escalating? Right now, the answer seems to be nothing. As we speak, oil is trading at $135 a barrel. That's an increase of $5 since you woke up yesterday. The two major factors are the ever-weakening dollar and supply. This morning, there's word of a new study about the world's oil fields and their future. Our man in London, Stephen Beard, joins us for more on that. Where's this study coming from, Stephen?
Well, this comes from the International Energy Agency, which is probably the world's most independent body looking at the oil market. It's been looking at the conditions of something like 400 of the world's top oil fields. It's only halfway through the study, but already it's pretty pessimistic, and it says it's going to revise its supply forecast down.
Why?
Well, it says oil fields have been aging, and the chief economist of the IEA says people don't realize how much, much more investment is required. This, he says, is a dangerous situation. What they're talking about here is rather than oil supply rising to meet anticipated demand, reaching a peak of about 116 million barrels a day by 2030, the IEA now says the world will struggle to produce much more than 100 million barrels a day over the next 20 years.
Okay, what does that mean for the price of oil?
Well, clearly, this is going to put further upward pressure on the price of oil. As you say, we've already hit $135 a barrel. Goldman Sachs is talking about the price of crude hitting $140 a barrel this summer and averaging $200 a barrel next year. Well, those forecasts are looking more and more realistic.
Well, Stephen, does the IEA have any suggestions on how to alleviate this supply-demand gap?
The agency is only halfway through its study, but it's pretty clear that what the agency is saying is a lot more money is going to have to go into exploration. At the same time, these pretty pessimistic forecasts are likely to be seized on by those who argue for more drilling in prohibited areas like the U.S. Outer Continental Shelf or the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge.
All right, Stephen Beard in London. Thank you.
Okay, Scott.
As you might imagine, the stock markets are not taking kindly to the oil price run-up. The Dow is coming off its second straight 200-point loss. It fell 227 points to 12,601. The NASDAQ dropped 43. The S&P 500 was down 22. In Asia today, stocks were mixed. Same story in Europe so far. What's the most annoying thing about cell phone companies? It's probably got to be those contracts and the penalties. Well, things might change on that. Jeff Tyler explains.
Cell phone providers say it's only fair to charge customers up to $175 when they cancel their contracts early. Companies say the fees cover the costs of all those cut-rate phones. That's not how Bob Williams with Consumers Union views the fees.
These are used by the phone companies as a way to keep their customers locked up.
Dissatisfied customers have filed class action lawsuits in several states. The industry wants the Federal Communications Commission to give it immunity. Again, Bob Williams.
It would give them billions of dollars in protection. In California, Singular, not so long ago, had to give people their early termination fees back.
In return for legal protection, the phone companies would let customers drop cell phone service in the first month without penalty. After that, any cancellation fees would be prorated. Williams says the industry isn't giving up much. Some companies like Verizon already offer these services. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Introducing ThriveQ, an online tool that helps you know where you stand on your path to retirement. More at ThriveQ.com. And by the Henry Luce Foundation. seeking to increase American understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
I've been reading a lot of stories about people buying gasoline and food on their credit cards because they don't have enough cash. That's not a good sign for the economy, which is very much driven by consumer spending. If people have too much personal debt, they won't be buying anything but food and gas. Economics professor Stephen Vasari says what this adds up to is a deeper recession than normal.
The recession of 1990 and 1991, as well as the recession of 2001, were, I believe, somewhat milder because consumer spending held up reasonably well. If we look back to the middle 1970s or the early 1980s, when we had deeper recessions, consumer spending dropped during those periods rather significantly. So as we go into this period, when high debt is likely to cause cutback in the household sector, we have to expect that the recession will be deeper than what we've seen the past two downturns in the economy.
But exactly how does that personal debt affect the bigger economy?
When consumers are building up that debt, it's a stimulative factor for the economy because it allows them to spend more and creates more revenue for business. But when they have to pull back, when they have to pay down that debt, consumer spending necessarily has to fall. The saving rate has to rise to make the payoff of the debt possible. The economy is going to slow unless there's some other source of spending that comes in to fill the gap where consumers have left.
What do you think we should do about this?
It's a hard problem. In the short term, it's going to be very difficult to do anything to prevent a recession and probably to prevent a rather long and deep recession. Over the longer term, it would probably be better to have a system that relied less on consumer debt, maybe more on higher incomes, faster wage growth, stronger investment, stronger export markets to help sustain the economy in the future. So we don't rely so much on building up debt or on having a housing bubble or a NASDAQ bubble or the other kinds of things that have supported the economy in recent years.
Professor Stephen Vasari at Washington University in St. Louis, thanks for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
Share your comments with us. We've made it even easier on our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening.
American Public Media.